House will please come to order. Please stand for the flag salute, which will be led today by Representative Garrett.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It is my pleasure today to introduce the Reverend Dr. Stephen Koski, who will be doing our invocation and opening ceremonies. Reverend Koski is the minister of First Presbyterian Church, where I am a member and parishioner. He hails originally from Minnesota. He has a bachelor's degree in psychology and English from Hamline University, a master's of divinity from Garrett Evangelical Theological Seminary, a doctor of ministry from McCormick Theological Ministry. He was a former professional actor, and one of his first positions as a minister was over in Australia, where he ministered for 12 years as a pastor and corporate trainer and speaker for leadership development. He was awarded the Speaker of the Year by the National Speakers Association of Australia. He came back to the United States and pastored at a Presbyterian church in LaGrange, Illinois, which is west of Chicago. Came to Bend about 3 years ago, directly from LaGrange. And he lives there with his wife, Lori, his two teenage sons, poor guy. They're good kids, Jacob and Jonah. And he is an eternally positive and proactive force within not only our church community, but also the community as a whole. He was recently appointed to the board of directors of the Volunteers in Medicine program, which is a volunteer clinic there in Central Oregon. One of his favorite admonitions to his congregation is, "The best is yet to be." Dr. Koski.
It is a great honor to be given this privilege, and in the spirit of ecumenism, I want to offer a Jewish tale, an adaptation of a Franciscan benediction for this invocation. A rabbi asked his students one day, "How can you tell when night has given way to day?" And the students were very eager to please their teacher. So one said, "You can tell when night has given way to day when you look in the distance and you can see the outline of a tree." And the rabbi gently shook his head no. Another student said, "Well, you can tell when night has given way to day when you can see that a cow is a cow and a horse is a horse." And the rabbi said no. So the student said, "Please, rabbi, tell us." And the rabbi said, "When you look into the eyes of another and you see a brother or you see a sister, it is day. But if you look into the eyes of another and you do not see a brother or a sister, it is still night." So I pray that God will bless you with discomfort at easy answers, that you might seek a deeper wisdom. I pray that God will bless you with holy discontent with the way things are, that you might passionately work for the way things can be. I pray that God will bless you with tears to shed for those who suffer, that you might tirelessly work to bring them comfort and hope. And I pray that God will bless you with just enough foolishness that you might believe that you can make a difference in this state, in this world, and do the things that others say simply cannot be done. And finally, I pray that God will bless you with joy. In the words of George Bernard Shaw, the true joy that comes from being used for a purpose, recognized by yourself as a mighty one. Amen.
Thank you very much. Courtesies. Let's begin with our moment in Oregon history. Representative Nolan.
Good morning, Mr. Speaker, and thank you. At 1,943 feet deep, Crater Lake is the deepest lake in the United States and the seventh deepest in the world. The lake was formed about 7,700 years ago when the cone of Mount Mazama collapsed and formed a caldera or crater, which filled with snowmelt to form a startlingly clear blue lake. For millennia and millennia, Mount Mazama was an important part of the seasonal migration of indigenous peoples in this region. And there is evidence that native people witnessed the volcano's eruption and the formation of the lake that 7,000 years ago. Oral tradition tells of a great war between Lao, the chief of the below world, who stood atop Mount Mazama, and Skell, the chief of the above world, who stood atop Mount Shasta. The great battle ended when Mount Mazama collapsed and Lao was defeated. The Klamath people used Crater Lake in their vision quests, which often involved climbing the caldera walls and other dangerous challenges. Those who were successful in such quests were often regarded as having special spiritual powers. Native Americans still consider the mountain and the lake to be sacred. In 1853, gold prospectors John Hillman, Henry Klippel, and Isaac Skeeters were probably the first non-natives to visit the lake, which they named creatively Deep Blue Lake. On October 9, 1865, a party of citizens from Fort Klamath, including Miss Annie Gaines and Mrs. O.T. Brown, accompanied some Army officers and visited the lake. During their sojourn there, Annie Gaines became the first non-native woman to descend to the water's edge. And Annie Spring, and later Annie Creek and Annie Creek Canyon, still today bear her name and honor her exploring spirit. In 1866, a team of U.S. Geologic Survey scientists led by Clarence Dutton explored the lake on the survey boat Cleetwood and were the first to record its depth, the first that we know of. William Steele, who was a member of the party, was the first non-native to explore Wizard Island, a truly magical 800-foot-tall cone-shaped island in the lake. After that excursion, he fell in love with the area and spent nearly two decades lobbying the U.S. government to protect the lake and the surrounding forests. And his efforts came to fruition on May 22, 1902, when President Theodore Roosevelt signed a bill making Crater Lake and its surrounding 159,000 acres the nation's sixth national park. Thank you, members, and thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Further courtesies, Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, yesterday I was able to introduce half of my students to you. Today the other half have joined us. They're in the side gallery today, and let's see how well this works. Arbor students, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, will you stand up to be recognized by my colleagues here on the House floor? Thank you very much for spending a day with us in Salem, and thank you to my colleagues who are meeting with some of these students this afternoon. As great a privilege as it is for me to serve in this House chamber, it's also an extraordinary privilege to work with this great group of kids when I'm not down here. So I miss you guys. I look forward to seeing you later in the day today and being back with many of you next fall. Thanks.
Welcome. Enjoy your day in the House and the Capitol. Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good morning. Good morning, colleagues. It's my pleasure to introduce to you today a fellow Barlow Bruin and a fellow Eastern Oregon University Mountaineer. Please stand up here. Her name is Andrea Johnson. She is a student at Eastern Oregon University. And as part of our introduction to you on the House floor, we did a little bit of an interview, and I'd just like to share some of these results with you. Her hometown is Boring, Oregon. but she's currently residing in LeGrand. She's majoring in biology. Her favorite thing about EOU is the real snow in the winter. And she says, oh, yeah, and I also like the campus, the professors, and just about everything else. Her favorite hero is that creepy Burger King mascot guy. If she was to be a superhero, she would like to be Mighty Mouse. Of course, she says they're both challenged in that height category. And she's asked what attribute power she would like to have as a superhero, and she said flight, of course. If she was a tree, she would like to be a lodgepole pine. That's because they're not necessarily the tallest pine out there, but they have power in numbers. And she comments, short people unite. If she could live anywhere in the world, she would just like to live everywhere, including Australia, Africa, and South America. And this is my favorite, colleagues, her quote to live by. And this is one, if you get nothing out of today, remember this one. This one's good. Life's great, then you die, but what the heck, after that it's heaven. Colleagues, please welcome Ms. Johnson to the Capitol today. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Welcome. Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also am a graduate of Eastern Oregon, then State College, now University, and I get to introduce Janet Jessup. Janet, would you come over here? Perfect. And I won't embarrass Janet too much about by reading to all of you her summary, because I think there's a lot of very personal things in here, Janet, but the one that's most personal is that she plans on going to law school, which I tried to convince her was not the right thing to do, but I think she's going to go ahead and go anyway. She is majoring in philosophy, politics, economics. Her activities are the History Club, Student Government, Pre-Law Society, and she's working on the Faculty Search Committee. Her hometown is Jerome, Idaho, but she's currently residing, of course, in LeGrand. Please extend courtesies to Janet Jessup, VP for Campus Affairs.
Welcome. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to recognize Howard Elementary School in North Eugene for receiving the prestigious Apple Distinguished School Award. Howard is one of 33 schools nationwide and one of only a handful of elementary schools nationwide to receive this honor. So I want to tell you what this involves. The Apple Distinguished School Award recognizes success in creating a 21st century learning environment across grade levels and in all aspects of the curriculum. Howard stands out as what's known as a one-to-one school where, get this, there is one laptop for every student. However, at Howard, it's not just about every student having a computer, it's how they use their computers. Howard uses podcasting for students to learn and to take virtual field trips to museums around the country and around the world. Every classroom has a smart board, like a blackboard or a whiteboard, so that the lessons are recorded. That way, when students go home at night and they're doing their homework, they still have access to what was taught during the day. They also use KidBiz, a program that retrieves articles from the Associated Press that are specifically matched to the student's reading level. It's normal at Howard Elementary to use document cameras, ProScopes, digital cameras, digital movie cameras, digital art tables, iPods, and smart boards every day. Howard is the first elementary school in Oregon to receive this recognition, so congratulations to the Howard staff and best wishes to the students, their teachers, and their parents. Thank you.
Congratulations. Representative Weyard.
Colleagues, I have a couple of honorary pages I'd like to introduce to you today. Alexis, stand up, please. Alexis Miller is 10 years old. She lives in Wilsonville and attends Boone's Ferry Primary. She's in the fourth grade. She enjoys choir, the Young Writers Program, acting, modeling, starting her own charity for kids with cancer to buy them wigs. And her career goals are to be a supermodel and a doctor, hopefully at the same time. Austin Miller is 13 years old, also from Wilsonville, attends Wood Middle School and is in the eighth grade. He enjoys choir and lacrosse and wants to be an animal trainer for TV and film. Both these young folks are related to my chief of staff, Michelle Miller, and I appreciate you extending your courtesies to them today. Thank you.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have four honorary pages from the great Leslie Middle School here in Salem. And our first one, Karina, if you would stand, please. Karina Sanchez from Leslie Middle School, eighth grader, loves basketball, volunteering at the community center, and wants to be a CSI investigator. So watch closely what's happening here today, Karina. Thank you. Our next honorary page, eighth grader from Leslie Middle School, Erica Alcantara. If I said that right, my daughter will correct me because she's bilingual, and she'll say, Dad, you said it wrong. And Erica likes basketball, soccer, volleyball, track and field, and would like to be a midwife or a pediatrician. Erica, welcome. Our next Leslie Middle School honorary page is Sebastian Montes. Sebastian, welcome. Eighth grader, plays football, likes playing the clarinet, and would love to be an actor when he grows up. Watch closely. There's a few of us on the House floor today as well. Welcome. And our last page today is Chris Cassidy from Leslie Middle School, eighth grader, football and track, and wants to be a doctor or a psychologist. Welcome, all of you, and enjoy your day with us.
Thanks to all of our pages. We appreciate your service to the House today. Representative Stigler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There was one thing I forgot to mention in my introduction of the Reverend Kosky, and that's that he should be given extra kudos today because he braved a very gnarly snowstorm coming over the Santiam Pass, and we'll have to brave it again going back. So it's called dedication.
Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, if you'll please join me in welcoming to the state capitol. Up in the upper balcony, this is Dr. Graydon King. He is a podiatrist out in the Gresham area. Joined a friend of his, Dr. McCammon, who's been in business about 7 years. And Dr. King comes from Utah, where he's now been practicing for 7 months in the Gresham area. Dr. King, welcome to the Capitol. Thanks for coming.
Welcome. Any further courtesies? The clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying a quorum. Excused, Representative Gelser. All other members are present. Message from the Governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the Governor to inform you that it is approved and signed the following bill, House Bill 2365.
Message from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that the Senate has passed Senate Bills 3644, 189, 195, 233, and 248.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. The clerk will read the resolution.
H.J.R. 15, recognizing March 2009 as Maternal Mental Health Awareness Month.
The question now rises upon final reading and adoption of H.J.R. 15. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring to you today H.J.R. 15, which recognizes March as Maternal Mental Health Awareness Month. It encourages healthcare providers, parents, early childhood professionals, and other stakeholders to increase understanding and awareness of the mental health needs of pregnant and postpartum women and their families. I first became aware of the prevalence and severity of issues surrounding maternal mental health while attending the Symposium on Early Childhood Development at Harvard University last summer. Also attending were Representatives Wisnett, Kotek, and Gelser. While discussing the environmental impacts on child development, mental health experts focused on the importance of the very early weeks and months in a baby's life, when the synapses of newborns are firing and growing at an astonishing rate. When mothers are unable to interact appropriately with their infants, babies do not receive the stimulation needed for adequate development. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Perinatal mood disorders, which include depression, anxiety, mania, and psychosis, are pervasive but treatable illnesses with real and long-term consequences for mothers, babies, and families. One out of eight pregnant or postpartum women will develop significant depression or panic disorder, and one in 500 will develop postpartum psychosis, which poses an immediate threat of suicide or even, in extreme circumstances, infanticide. Reliable evidence-based methods for culturally competent risk evaluation, screening, and treatment exist, but are not adequately utilized. On returning to Oregon, I discovered a whole network of volunteers and professionals working in the area of maternal mental health. Today, they are hosting a regional maternal mental health symposium co-sponsored by the Oregon Infant Mental Health Association and Oregon's Public Health Division's Office of Family Health. Over 300 participants are here in Salem today to learn about prenatal and postpartum depression, focusing on both the health of the mother and the well-being of the entire family. Professionals are talking today about best practices for screening and treatment for maternal mood disorders and initiatives adopted in other states to address this problem. Our resolution today complements the good work they are doing in heightening an awareness of the pervasiveness and impact of maternal mood disorders. And I also want to give you all a heads up. While today I'm here presenting a resolution to increase the awareness of maternal health, mental health, I hope later in the session to bring you a more substantive bill calling for the Department of Human Services to officially review and report on existing needs, programs, gaps, and funding strategies for maternal mental health during and after pregnancy. Until then, I urge you to join me in supporting House Joint Resolution 15, declaring March as Maternal Mental Health Awareness Day. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Tomei, do you wish to close?
No, I do not. Thank you.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Representative Olson? Off the floor. HJR 15, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 2932 relating to health insurance. House Bill 2958 relating to radiologic technologies. House Bill 2959 relating to financial information. House Bill 2961 relating to local requirements for the construction of structures. House Bill 2962 relating to residential housing. House Bill 2963 relating to strikes by certain public attorneys. House Bill 2964 relating to low-income electric bill payment assistance. House Bill 2965 relating to the transfer of technology and declared an emergency. House Bill 2966 relating to mass transit districts. House Bill 2967 relating to task force on coordination of behavioral science research and declared an emergency. House Bill 2968 relating to hearings
enforce the provision of driving privilege. House Bill 2969 related to attorney fees and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2970 related to expending utilization of the earned income tax credit appropriate money and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2971 related to use of state highway funds monies. House Bill 2972 related to sex offender registration and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2973 related to public borrowing. House Bill 2974 related to tobacco. House Bill 2975 related to public employee retirement and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2976 related to school finance and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2977 related to animal control and appropriate money. House Bill 2978 related to podiatric physicians. House Bill 2979 relating to the access to toilet facilities. House Bill 2980 relating to water conservation. House Bill 2981 relating to employment of persons with criminal convictions and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2982 relating to nutritional values and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2983 relating to property tax liens. House Bill 2984 relating to aquatic invasive species. House Bill 2985 relating to reports prepared by the Department of Human Services. House Bill 2986 relating to inbreeding of dogs. House Bill 2987 relating to child care programs. House Bill 2988 relating to the voluntary central background registry. House Bill 2889 relating to Department of Human Services. House Bill 2990 relating to child care agencies and appropriated money. House Bill 2991 relating to firearms. House Bill 2992 relating to unemployment insurance benefits extensions and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2993 relating to nonprofit organizations appropriated money. House Bill 2994 relating to annexations. House Bill 2995 relating to Oregon Food Policy Council appropriated money and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2996 relating to removal fill permitting program. House Bill 2997 relating to the conservation of manufactured dwelling parks, two subdivisions. House Bill 2998 relating to manufactured dwelling park conversions. House Bill 2999 relating to the pesticide use reporting system and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3001 relating to autism spectrum disorder appropriated money and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3002 relating to state parks and recreation commission fees. House Bill 3003 relating to autism spectrum disorder. House Bill 3004 relating to sales of foreclosed property and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3005 relating to business plans for energy production projects appropriated money and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3006 relating to hunting on public lands. House Bill 3007 relating to capacity to stand trial. House Bill 3008 relating to bicycles and appropriated money. House Bill 3009 relating to elections. House Bill 3010 relating to legislative administration committee and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3011 relating to government ethics and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3100 relating to area of critical state concern and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3145 relating to regulation of insurance rates.
Bills read for the first time or passed the speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 2203 relating to unemployment insurance. House Bill 2261 relating to affordable housing tax credit and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 2318 relating to traffic offenses. House Bill 2625 relating to ballast water.
Bills read for the second time or passed the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the first bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 14 relating to Oregon Patient Safety Commission. Repeals sunset on Oregon Patient Safety Commission.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of SB 14. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes aye. Senate Bill 14, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House Bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2058, related to regulation of health professions and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2058A. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. In the middle of the 2007 session, one of the health licensing boards blew up in scandal, and it was very clear in that board that the public responsibility of protecting the public had not been served on that board. It caused the health committee to take up the situation of health licensing boards, and we dealt with it from the end of the 2007 session all through the interim to now, where we're still working with it. And what we have in front of us today is the first bill in a series that we'll be bringing to you to help ensure that the health licensing boards are properly balancing their dual function of protecting the public and enhancing professional practice. When we began to look at the scandal in one of the boards, and the governor got on this very quickly, as did our committee and a variety of other people, it was clear that the rules regulating, the statutes regulating the 17th health licensing boards had grown up helter-skelter, and that the board's monitoring of those boards was very different. It was not possible, for example, to find out who was responsible for oversight for the Board of Nursing, the Board of Medicine, and down through, I think, 17 different boards. So we began to work on it. When the governor looked at the mess that was going on in the board, we found out that he did not have the ability to replace the board members, even though it was clear as a board they had not been fulfilling their function in any adequate way. So we began to look at it, and we found out that on some boards, the governor could replace the members for cause. In some boards, the statutes dictated that the governor, that the members of the board served at the pleasures of the governor, and in some boards, there was no statement at all about how a board could be replaced. And in fact, in one board, the governor could only replace a member of the board on the request of the board itself. This statute clarifies all those matters for all the boards, and it requires that board members are named by the governor, confirmed by the Senate, and serve at the pleasure of the governor. It sets a term of 3 years for all board members to standardize that. It defines the characteristics of a public member and basically says that they can't be a family member of a professional licensed by the board, and it defines what a family member is. And it basically clarifies those issues. We'll be back with some more issues as we can work it out on the committee. They're not all as straightforward and simple as these. This bill passed the House Committee on Health Care without dissent, and I urge you all to vote aye on House Bill 2058.
Further discussion, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
I just want to add a couple comments to this. We've had some serious problems with our health licensing boards growing up in odd fashions, and this is a correction to that. I want to commend the chair of the Health Care Committee for his work and diligence in making those corrections. And this is about the public interest and meeting that need. And so I urge your support of House Bill 2058 Alpha.
Further discussion, Representative Barnhart's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I would be delighted to.
Thank you. And I apologize for not getting this question to you in advance, but I believe it's one.
All right, I can make up answers.
You can probably
even if I
answer.
Don't have advance.
Yes, thank you. I noticed on the very first section, referring to the Board of Psychologists Examiners, that one of the items indicates that a professional organization representing psychologists may recommend 3 to 5 persons for appointment to the board to the governor. It isn't clear, but I assume, and please tell me if I've got this assumption correct, that the governor may pick from that list, or he may appoint somebody else who meets the qualifications.
Yes, I believe that's correct, and this bill doesn't change the existing statute on that matter.
Thank you. Thank you,
Representative Barnhart. Okay, further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Greenlink, do you wish to close?
I do not.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Representative Harker, how do you vote? Harker votes aye. Representative Thompson, how do you vote? Thompson votes aye. House Bill 2058A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2611, relating to preceding year production limits for brewery public house licensees, selling at wholesale, and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2611. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2611, which passed unanimously out of the Business and Labor Committee, will increase the production limit for brewery public houses and their wholesale limits from 1,000 to 5,000 barrels. This will affect... Oregon currently has 62 breweries. This will help 55 of them. The other seven already sell about 95% of the craft beer in Oregon. This will help the local ones without major distribution networks. It's a good vote. I urge an aye. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barton, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 2611, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2634, related to security for payment of workers' compensation insurance premiums.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2634. Representative Kennemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2634 is, at least I hope, a very simple bill. The statutes on SAFE have not been updated with regard to payment since 1933, and the world has changed. And their competitors have letters of credit and similar instruments available for payment to them, but that remedy for payments is not has not been available to SAFE. This changes that inequity. I think it's a very good idea. We were going to send it to the floor for the consent agenda, and I said, you know, since we're updating something that's from 1933, we probably ought to announce it publicly, so I now have the honor of carrying this small bill. But I think it's an appropriate update, and I encourage your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Representative Nathanson.
I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
State your conflict.
A member of my household is employed by SAFE.
So noted. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kennemer, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes aye. Representative Kennemer, how do you vote? Kennemer votes aye. House Bill 2634, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final readings, memorials, and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 36 related to tolling of interstate bridges. Senate Bill 44 relating to kindergarten and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 189 related to forest land fire protection. Senate Bill 195 relating to wave energy and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 233 relating to crime victims' rights and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 248 relating to juvenile proceedings.
Bills read for the first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5552 relating to state financial administration appropriate money and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 234 relating to procedure for judicial review of land use decisions. Senate Bill 581 relating to state financial administration appropriate money and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the second time or passed the third reading calendar. Third reading of Senate bills. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Senate Bill 5552 and Senate Bill 581 be read for the third time immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 5552, relating to state financial administration, appropriating money, and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5552A. And colleagues, I think several of you who want to discuss this bill, so I would encourage us to hear each other. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, brothers, sisters, Senate Bill 552 contains all of the budget reductions, fund shifts, and federal stimulus funds need to reconcile the statewide budget for 2007-09. So how did we get to this point? We're experiencing an economic downturn that's turned into a national and international collapse. The work on this downturn that our state and our country is facing began last spring when the emergency board began to address issues with state spending to reduce state spending in the current biennium. Department of Human Services, under the direction of Dr. Bruce Goldberg, has done an extremely credible job of reducing expenditures in their department to try to address the economic downturn of our state while still protecting services for Oregonians. Department of Corrections under Max Williams has done the same thing. They began last spring making reductions necessary to make sure that their services at the Corrections Department could stay solvent during this economic downturn. But in the fall, we experienced something more than the economic downturn. We experienced an economic collapse, nationally and internationally. The November forecast informed us that our state budget was $142 million short, and we all knew that that number was going to increase. The governor responded by doing what he can do constitutionally, take an allotment cut across state agencies. He asked for a 1% reduction from every state agency, and that was done in December and January to try to address that $142 million shortfall. At the same time, we requested every agency to submit a list of proposed cuts, reaching 5% of their total budget, to see what we could possibly cut as this shortfall grew. And the agencies produced those lists in the month of January. Also in January, the state economist gave us a sneak preview of what we are facing. He made an announcement that we are looking at not $142 million, colleagues, that we are looking at an additional $300 to $500 million or more in shortfall. So our work was presented to us, how to address a shortfall of that nature. We chose to address a shortfall even greater than was predicted. We chose the number of $800 million to take on that shortfall for this budget, to take on this challenge on behalf of our state. And the process that we followed was very clear. We posted on the internet the list of the cuts provided by every agency in state government to make sure that was public, what we were talking about, the parameters that we were working in. We had to get this work done in an unprecedented short period of time. We held public hearings to get input from all Oregonians, from all walks of life, on what they saw to be the impact of cuts on education, healthcare, public services. We listened. We took input from members of this body. We listened. We tracked the federal stimulus bill. I spent the entire weekend that that bill finally passed the U.S. Senate watching CNN and just not being able to sleep. Because the impact of that federal stimulus on our state is nothing short than a lifeline. Without that federal stimulus money, colleagues, we would be closing our schools in May. We would be closing down prisons in our state. We would be impacting the safety of our citizens. But the federal stimulus money did come through, and we tracked it, and we made that part of this package. The co-chairs came up with their proposal, their mix of cuts and use of the federal stimulus money, and the subcommittees then went to work on those lists of cuts. On February 20th, we received the news from the state economist that we were $855 million down, even greater than what we were shooting for, and we continued to work. The subcommittees brought up new ideas of how to address cuts in a way that stuck to the principles that we did our work with, and we worked until the last minute trying to find the ways to make sure that we're cutting in a wise way, in a wise manner, in a manner that could be supported by the majority of Oregonians. And I'm going to take just a minute, colleagues, to read the principles that we followed in this work, because I believe they're important. To the greatest extent possible, focus on the impacts of decisions on the economy, jobs, and safe communities. Place human safety issues first by minimizing reductions that would significantly endanger seniors, children, and the disabled. Maximize the use of federal dollars wherever possible, including any receipts from the pending federal economic stimulus package. Limit damage to education as much as possible, in recognition that local school districts have few options to reduce expenditures at this point in the school year outside of eliminating school days, and that community colleges and higher education can generally only eliminate courses to adjust to a large current biennium cut. Keep in mind the cost shift from one agency to another when reductions are made, such as reductions in in-home care leading to increased costs in assisted living and nursing homes, as one example. And recognize the long-term costs of dismantling vital programs, knowing that those programs will need to be rebuilt at some point in the future. Colleagues, we've done this work. We've held to these principles. The bill before you today is one of two bills that we'll be voting on. It is the result of the effort of this body. It's not something that we've engaged in with a sense of joy. It's something that we've engaged in with a sense of responsibility to fulfill our service to our state. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Regarding Oregon Liquor Control Commission, I was sitting on the Ways and Means Committee and spoke numerous times against taking agents' commissions or reducing them. And what ended up getting settled on was a question of $1.4 million that may be returned to the agents at the end of the biennium. Can you give me some guidance on may? Do the liquor store agents have any guarantees here?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Representative, for the question. Thank you for the courtesy of providing the question in advance. The short answer is yes. I give great credit to Representative David Edwards, the House co-chair of that committee, for working endlessly with OLCC and members to try to come up with a way to minimize the impact of cuts on OLCC and on the agents in particular. And is the absolute intent of the work that Representative Edwards has done to complete this deal that if the benchmarks for sales are accomplished and the increased prices put forward by the Commission are included with that, it is the full intention of this legislative body to return that money, that $1.4 million, to the agents at the completion of this biennium.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Huffman.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm concerned about the May. These liquor store owners make money for the state of Oregon. Goes into the general fund to help us pay bills. And I've spoken strongly against this because this cut in their commissions is going to be retroactive to February 1st. It's going to total 25%+ that they use to keep their store hours open, to sell liquor, distilled spirits that bring revenue in for the state, to pay employees to work in their stores, to pay income tax into the state. And I fail to see how we're going to get ahead in the situation that we're trying to get ahead on in the rebalance if we're going to lose employees that are paying income tax, they're going to go on unemployment, and store hours are going to be reduced where sales are probably going to go down. I can't say that unequivocally, but I would probably bet some money on it. And we're going to end up losing money in liquor sales. And I think this is one of those options that we should have looked at more closely. And I do appreciate Co-Chair Edwards working on this with me and working toward a better solution than what it started out being. but I'm still very unhappy with the outcome. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, when talking about this bill today, we will hear, and I've already heard, how we've been able to make some very strategic things happen, given some very tough circumstances. We've protected vital public services, our schools. We've kept schools open at a time when none of these things seemed possible. We were able to pull together and prioritize our most essential programs. Still, some in the chamber are not completely satisfied with the results. And colleagues, I understand that feeling. I think that's fair. We, understandably, given who we are, view all of our challenges as solvable. We wish we could fully fund schools and services and all the rest, given our fiscal dilemma. But these are unprecedented times, so much so that I believe the word unprecedented is a bit overused, but in this case, it means something entirely new. In these times, it is not possible to fund all things. We have had to make some very difficult choices, but we have made them. So what I would like to talk about briefly is not what we're voting for, which is a budget that accomplishes the goal of filling that $850 million hole with the least amount of pain. Instead of talking about what a yes vote means, I'd like to take a few moments to talk about what a no vote means. What would happen if we were all to vote no today? For the choice before us today is not between this budget and some other budget that is free of cuts. Our choice today is between this budget, which cuts $300 million, or the governor's allotment process, which would cut over $850 million from this budget in the last few months of the biennium. An $850 million cut across the board. That's the other option. The governor has made clear that if we do not do the tough work of pulling together and prioritizing and protecting vital programs, that he will be forced to do it for us and do it through the allotment process. That would mean a $344 million cut from K-12 education. The budget before us today cuts only an additional $54 million after we added back $51 million last week to help schools stay open. The governor's across-the-board allotment cut would mean a $211 million cut from human services. We propose today cutting only $27 million. The governor's across-the-board allotment cut would mean a $116 million cut to public safety. We have cut less than half that amount. So, colleagues, please make no mistake. A no vote today is not a vote for a perfect budget. A no vote today is not a signal that we could have done more, not when we are staring down an even greater shortfall for the next budget with the May forecast yet to come. The choice today is between the difficult choices we have made and the unacceptable choice the governor would have made for us. A no vote is a vote for deep, indiscriminate, unacceptable cuts that will harm our state now and far into the future. Colleagues, I urge your aye vote today on this budget plan. It's the right choice. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
On behalf of the folks in Burns, I want to first thank the Ways and Means Committee for salvaging the jobs that were on the cutting board, so to speak. And the folks in Burns are extraordinarily happy. Now, having said that, I want to note that I agree that our state is facing unprecedented times, and I fear they're going to grow worse. In fact, anyone who watches the news knows they're going to grow worse. So the question today is whether or not the cuts were enough. And sadly, in my opinion, they were not. I guess the question is, why does this make a difference? And since I sit on revenue, the answer is, what message are we sending those who could wreak havoc upon whatever our 09, 011 plan might be? That's the question. Does the message we send today that we were not, sadly, courageous enough to make the cuts indicate to those voters that we spent money over the next 6 months we shouldn't have spent? That's the question. And sadly, I have to disagree with some of the remarks made today. I think we have it within our power, if we were to vote no, to go in and use that stimulus money, which, by the way, thank God we got, because the situation would be so grim without it. But it seems to me we have to tell the voters that we are going to cut, and this bill does not send that signal. And thus, I think we are increasing the chances of a referendum and severe damage this summer. So I'll vote no. And my hope is that when people look at the vote, they'll say, hey, folks do understand in Salem that cuts have to happen. And they will happen, I'm sure. Now, the folks that are on the Ways and Means Committee did a great job. I wouldn't trade places with any of you. But the sad part is your empathy, I think, may do more damage in the long run. And I hope I'm wrong. So I'll vote no.
Representative Hannah. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, at the beginning of the 2007 session, the legislature had at its disposal $2.9 billion in new revenue. At that time, the state's growing economy gave us an unprecedented opportunity to adequately fund core functions of government and save money for the future. Senate Bill 5552 represents the legislature's failure to follow through with that opportunity. We knew in early 2008 that the state's economy was beginning to decline, and we also knew in early 2008 that tax revenues were beginning to severely decline. The legislature could have then chosen to take action and gradually scale back the spending that we had proposed in the 07-09 budget, but we did not do so. Colleagues, why? Why did we wait? Why did we not scale back when we knew the facts, when we knew where this was going? Rather than working with agencies and school districts to help them manage these reductions over the course of the biennium, the legislature chose to send our state and local governments into the absolute nosedive that we're in today. Here are just a few of the facts about the rebalance plan. The rebalance breaks the legislature's promise to fund a school year, or a full school year. The 07-09 K-12 budget was heralded as a historic reinvestment in schools. Yet we are now voting to cut school days in many districts. Ask yourselves why we are the only state currently considering cutting school days. Rather than put the responsibility on school districts to save days, we could have partially utilized the Education Stability Fund to enable all schools to make it through this year and better manage reductions into the next biennium. This rebalance plan also fails to assure round-the-clock state police protection we promised last February. No matter how you spin it, a cut is a cut. This bill reverses the very commitment that we made to add the 39 troopers to provide 24/7 coverage throughout Oregon. Yes, it's tough, but there's no guarantee we will prioritize spending into the future and enable those new troopers to hit the road in the next biennium either.
The rebalance plan cuts the judiciary by $16 million and, as you all know, allows our courts to be closed on Fridays. The judiciary could be said as Oregon's long-neglected branch of government. Under the rebalance plan, the courts would only be able to respond to emergency cases for the next 4 months and beyond. According to the Chief Justice, this rebalance plan will cause hundreds of criminal trials to be postponed, and as he put it, likely for so long that charges would have to be dismissed. Local jails would get increasingly overcrowded because offenders would be in them but not convicted and sent to prison. Colleagues, I appreciate the hard work and good intentions that have gone into the rebalance, but I believe we could have done better. At the same time, this plan cuts school days. It doesn't touch the $130 million that sets in PEB's ending fund balance. What makes PEB's ending fund balance untouchable? When the bill raids the 9/11 fund, the cultural trust fund, and the funds that promote economic development at a time when we're at the highest unemployment rate many of us have ever seen. This plan simply picks winners and losers across state and local government. And while the plan cuts very deep into the judiciary and several agencies, some agencies are simply held harmless. We should ask why. While we move backwards on state police funding, the rebalance clings to 312.
Representative Krieger yields.
Thank you, Representative. While we move backwards on state police funding, the rebalance clings to $312 million in pay raises that were handed out to state managers and employees last year. Colleagues, I do believe it is true. Deeper cuts are looming in the 09-11 biennium. More painful decisions must be made. But it must be noted that the legislature failed to rebalance the budget in a way that could have made the cuts in the next biennium less painful. I urge a no vote on Senate Bill 5552. Let's work to get our priorities straight and spend Oregonians' tax dollars more wisely. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Regarding troopers, one of the most critical areas of state government is the public safety arena. I'm supporting both the budget bills today, rebalance bills today, because I believe we have done everything we could to protect public safety in this difficult environment where we are cutting the budgets. Some have claimed that this budget rebalance cuts will cut the state troopers. This is simply not the case. I checked with the Oregon State Police, and the simple truth is they could not train and deploy all 139 troopers we have approved in this biennium. Since we approved those additional 139 troopers in the 07 session and the 08 session, the department has hired 82 new troopers. A class of 21 recruits is set to end the May Academy, and those troops will be deployed as soon as they are trained. The next recruiting class is going to the Academy in September of this year. So there is simply no way for the OSP to train and deploy all 139 troopers by the end of June. Rather than allowing that money to sit idle, we've taken those savings now and used them to help refill the $850 million hole in this 07-09 budget. That's just smart management. We also know that the 09-11 base budget for the state police is released. All 139 troopers will be there. The position authority will remain intact. We are not cutting the state troopers. After years of neglect of the state police, this legislature made significant strides in 2007 and 2008 in restoring around-the-clock coverage on our state highways. It was part of our roadmap. It was one of the promises we made to voters. We are not backing down from that promise. Those troopers will be funded. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Buckley, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just briefly, thank you, colleagues, for the discussion on this bill. Greatly appreciated. a few comments from the discussion that we've had, just kind of to clarify some situations and respond. With great respect to the representative from Far Eastern Oregon, on the one hand, we were able to keep the Burns facility open, and I'm very grateful we've been able to do that, protect those jobs. It does have an impact on the economy. But to say that that is a proper move, but then to say we have not cut enough, is hard for me to reconcile. The cuts that were posted on the Internet for everyone to see, the level of cuts we cut down to, particularly, if, for instance, in human services, we cut down to the level where we stopped. If we had gone further, we would be taking items such as respirators away from seniors who depend on a respirator for their in-home health care. That's the level that we stopped at. Your point that there are deeper cuts to come is very well taken. We have a tremendous challenge ahead of us in 09-11 with a projected deficit right now of $3.3 billion, and we know that that is going to continue to grow. So it's going to be extremely hard for all of us to deal with that. If the belief is that we have not cut far enough now, I challenge that statement just in respect, just given to the level that we have cut. Others of your colleagues have talked about our cutting education budget to the point where districts had to cut school days. So on the one hand, if you said we didn't cut far enough, there's others who said that we've cut too far. We've worked tremendously hard with the school districts to try to address that issue, try to address how do we keep our education systems intact. That's our intent, that's our goal, but we also have to look at 09-11, and we're looking at $3.3 billion deficit. So if we have reduced the cut to schools down to where it is now, where most school districts are wrestling with how to address 2 or 3 days in this biennium, we're leaving them with a challenge, colleagues, for the next biennium that could be up to 15, 20, 25 school days or higher, much higher class sizes in an elementary school. So, I mean, that's a dilemma that we're dealing with, and I know you understand that, and I know that we're all trying to find what the balance is here. To address a few issues concerning the cuts to judicial, with all due respect to the minority leader, the number that he mentioned was the original cut, which is the 5% cut that the legislative branch has taken and the executive branch has taken. We did not take the full 5% from judicial. We worked to bring that down. It's now down to $11 million. We are continuing to work with the Chief Justice. Senator Carter, I met with the Chief Justice this morning, continuing to work to see how can we further address the situation with our courts. We share the goal of a strong judicial system in the state of Oregon. There's no doubt about that. So to sort of frame the cuts to judicial as a way to somehow undermine the judicial system is simply not correct. And finally, Mr. Speaker and colleagues, I'd like to just kind of address the idea that the legislature is somehow responsible for the international economic collapse. It's hard for me to understand that how this legislature somehow is responsible for Bear Stearns, somehow responsible for AIG, somehow responsible for collapse of these major financial institutions. I don't quite get that. And colleagues, I will stand here as someone who worked on in 2007. I stand proudly behind the work we did in 2007 to fund our schools after so many years of neglect, to fund higher education after so many years of neglect, to fund community colleges after so many years of neglect, to fund mental health services after so many years of neglect. I am proud of the work we did in 2007, colleagues, and I greatly look forward to future years when we can work together to reinvest in education, to reinvest in public safety, to reinvest in human services, because that's what our state needs. That's what our state is all about. And we are going to reinvest, colleagues. We're going to make it through. We are going to make it through this crisis that we're facing, and it is a crisis. I can't say that word often enough. It is a crisis that we are facing. And colleagues, with this work we have done, we are facing that crisis directly. We're facing it openly. We're facing it in an inclusive manner, and we're facing it in tune with the values that we all share and our shared love for the state of Oregon. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Colleagues, we have several members in the queue to state conflicts. I just remind us that if you do have a conflict where the income of you or family member is going to be potentially impacted in the next 4 months because of changes made in this bill, you should state a conflict. If you're in a more general class that is where your income or the family income is not going to be impacted, but you may work for a state agency or a family member may work for a state agency, you don't need to state a conflict. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Wish to declare a potential conflict of interest.
State your conflict.
First one is that I have I'm a member of a limited liability company that has a month-to-month contract with the Oregon Blind Commission. The second one is that I have a daughter who is a teacher, and there is a potential that contracts will be reopened as a result of this in her district or school days cut.
Thank you. The first one is a great example of a specific class. The second one is probably a good example of a more general class where you don't need to say the conflict. Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. I need to declare a conflict of interest.
State your conflict, please.
Colleagues, I have a significant financial interest in a company that will lose money as a result of passage of Senate Bill 5552A.
Thank you. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wish to declare a potential conflict.
State your conflict.
Thank you. I am a member of a limited liability corporation that provides month-to-month contracting services to one of the agencies affected.
Thank you. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Wingard votes no. Senate Bill 5552A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 581, relating to State Financial Administration, appropriating money and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 581A. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 581 implements the legislative changes that are necessary to rebalance the state's 2007-09 biennial budget. This bill, commonly referred to as the Program Change Bill, is a companion bill to the recently passed Senate Bill 5552, which is the Rebalance Plan's Disappropriations Actions. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion. Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, the Ways and Means process in a down budget year is an absolutely thankless task. One can see a version of hell in which your eternity is spent as a Ways and Means co-chair with a down budget for eternity, and I don't say that lightly. It is a thankless task. Because of that, I want to give thanks to the Ways and Means members generally and to the co-chair specifically for your hours of painful and necessary work. These folks get lots of complaints, but little praise and even littler thanks. So before I complain, let me first praise and say thank you, especially to my friend, the representative from Ashland, for his tireless work. In the last analysis, however, this process is about prioritization. And while I believe we all prioritize schools, colleges, mental health treatment, and senior assistance, our absolute priorities are as unique as we are as individuals. Mr. Speaker, I believe that one of our absolute priorities should be Oregon's unique cultural trust. As most of us know, Mr. Speaker, the trust is an organization dedicated to advancing arts and culture throughout Oregon. It's funded by a combination of trust license plate sales as well as direct contributions from Oregon citizens and businesses. The goal has always been of the trust a long-term protected endowment that would use interest and dividend earnings to support arts and culture for the benefit of education, for the benefit of commerce and jobs, and for the benefit of our quality of life. And while some may say you're in an economic downturn, a crisis, as the good representative said perfectly, why do we consider keeping arts whole or funding arts during this time? And it could be said no better than it was today driving in on NPR, and some of you heard this, when they took a quote from FDR during his 1934 arts program, and the same question was asked of him, and he said, maybe a little indelicately, but I think it's good to hear, FDR said, they're workers and they need to eat too, the support we give to artists, the entrepreneurials, and the arts and the cultures. The Oregon Cultural Trust This organization is a trust in both senses of the word. It's a trust fund endowment, and it's a trust with Oregonians who have made their contributions to support the support Oregon arts. SB 581 sadly violates that trust in both senses of the word. SB 581 violates that trust and a priority. And again, while I admit that budget priorities may vary from individual to individual, sacrificing the trust by sweeping away its funding base and our trust with the contributors should not be our priority. For this reason, Mr. Speaker, acknowledging the hard, diligent work that went into it, I regret that I cannot support Senate Bill 581. But again, I want to iterate, God bless you, Representative from Ashland. You are truly doing the Lord's work. I commend you. Once again, however, I cannot support this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues.
To the bill.
To the bill. Absolutely. If you look at the principles used by our co-chairs in crafting this budget rebalance bill, you will see that one of the key tenets of their work was that vulnerable Oregonians will not be placed in life-threatening situations because of the cuts we are making here today. I believe we have accomplished that goal. Every one of these cuts in the Human Services Department, while they do have impacts on the lives of Oregonians, has been done in a thoughtful and compassionate way. We kept aid to seniors who still live at home. We did not throw people off the Oregon Health Plan. We protected the essential services. We also made sure that nearly every school district in our state is able to keep their doors open the rest of this school year. We accomplished this fairly remarkable budget balance in a number of ways. We made over $300 million in cuts. We used federal stimulus dollars. We asked administrators and state workers to make sacrifices. We kept positions unfilled. And one other thing we did was to use excess reserves from nearly every agency in this state. The use of some of these funds has created some controversy. It created controversy in my own household. As some of you know, my husband is an artist. He has one of the first cultural trust license plates issued in this state. If you look down on my old Acura parked in the parking garage, you will see another cultural plate. This budget takes $1.8 million out of a $12 million trust. And I would add to you, colleagues, some of us give money to cultural interests, and we also get a tax credit. I hope that all of you are taking that tax credit. But I want to say that's one of the ways that the state contributes every year to cultural issues. We did not clean out accounts and leave groups penniless. We did not take operating dollars from any agency or fund. Where it made sense, where we could capture some money to fill the education or the human services hole, we did take those funds, and we make no apology to anyone for that. When it comes to keeping schools open and providing essential human services, I have a hard time believing any person who contributes a few bucks to a worthy cause would have a problem with using a small percentage of those funds to fund these critical activities of state government. Look, no one in this room cares more about the arts than Peter Buckley from Ashland. No one in this room cares more about public safety than former police officer Jeff Barker. And no one cares more about human services than I do. but frankly, we all understand the need for all of us to share in the sacrifices necessary to get through this budget. We all have seen the devastating numbers we face for 09-11, and we will vote for this bill. This has been a difficult process for all of us, but we've done our job, and we've made the tough choices necessary to balance this budget. For those who have this quaint notion that their piece of the pie deserves protection in this budget environment when all the others are contributing to the cause, I say this: our children, our vulnerable citizens, our most needy do not have the luxury of reserve funds. And in these trying times, all of us must be willing to do our part to keep those most at risk get through this global recession. Kudos for all of you on the Ways and Means Committee who crafted this budget, and to Representative Buckley for taking on the most difficult job in the Capitol this season. And please, thank you, Representative. Let's close the book on 07-09 and get on with the business of crafting a budget for the 09-11 biennium. Because these decisions will seem easy to those we are likely to be forced to make in a couple of months. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
And colleagues, I would just remind us all that we should not be referencing other members by name. That's why we've been given these handy-dandy little yellow cards here with all kinds of creative references to ourselves. And also that we need to be careful about assigning motives or intent to other members, even if those motives or intent are positive. Further discussion, Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in opposition to Senate Bill 581. The sweep that we're doing, the almost $83 million that we're picking up, I have no problem taking money from accounts that were created with general fund or from funds from other agencies. But I have a real problem when we start taking funds that were contributed by individuals or by corporations for a specific task. And I give you two examples in the bill, Section 33, Department of Agriculture, weights and measures, and pesticides. Those two accounts are to keep our programs in those areas going. Now, we're told that there won't be any increase in fees in 09-11, but I can almost assure you that somewhere down the road there'll be an increase in fees because of this money that we've taken. I point to 9-11 funds. I really think, though, that's taking money from local jurisdictions that we don't really have a right to take. 2 weeks ago, this floor passed a bill providing funding for homeless through recording fees and asked counties to process that with no compensation. I feel that that's an unfunded mandate. Today, we're taking $2 million from counties video poker. I don't believe in these tough times when we're all struggling to find the dollars to balance things, I don't think we should be pushing the obligation down to cities and counties. Finally, I want to point out to you that natural resources portion of the cut would have been $10.8 million. The co-chairs took $12.1 million, more than their proportional cut. Only economic development and natural resources took more than their cut. I urge a no vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Wisnitz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Honorable colleagues, rebalancing the 2007-2009 budget at this late date is a very difficult task. And I appreciate the difficult decisions that had been made and the many hours of dedicated work that went into these decisions. However, I rise in opposition to Senate Bill 581, primarily based upon the diversion of the 911 funds from our local services to the state general funds. I take this position in support of Deschutes County's 911 General Service District, or Service District, as well as those in neighboring Jefferson and Crook counties' 911 services who oppose the diversion of the 911 funds to the general fund. The bill contains provisions which would transfer our state budget shortfall to local governments. Senate Bill 581 would take $3.6 million from our critical emergency services and leave every dispatch facility undermanned, under-equipped, and underfunded. By statute, this funding is dedicated to 911 for operations and maintenance of our networks, operation and maintenance of their databases, as well as maintenance and replacements of other necessary equipment. Transferring this dedicated funding to the general fund has two possible consequences. Either local governments will have to raise additional funds, or 911 services will be significantly compromised. In this time of economic hardship, citizens of this state are relying on most to make tough decisions about funding, not to simply pass the buck to our local governments. Our local governments do not have the money to compensate for this loss. So in many districts, 911 services will be ended. We don't want to cut off the respirators for people. We also rely on 911 dispatchers as our lifeline to public safety. When our homes are on fire or threatened by wildfire, what do? We call 911. Little girl falls down or has a heart problem, wind is broke, dogs start barking in the middle of the night, we call 911. Now we have an emergency, our budget is short, and we're facing economic hardships, but we shouldn't call on 911 to make this sacrifice. Budget emergencies are for the legislature, not the 911. It's essential, and we cannot compromise their ability to dispatch services in a timely manner. Senate Bill 581 would do just that. And colleagues, I want to put on the record that there's a high possibility. I know that there's conversations between the co-chairs, but I think there's a high, and the Department of Justice, but I think there's a high possibility that transferring these funds is illegal in accordance with federal and state laws and could result in the loss of federal funds. Also realize my 911 district has passed local option taxes because we want and value 911 services. This raid on 911 funds has taken a dedicated tax for other than revenue purposes. The Ben Bulletin this week said, we have paid 911 telephone taxes largely without complaint and no doubt will continue to do so. Taking the money for something else is hardly designed to build the belief that government will be honest with us. Colleagues, I urge you to join me. Let's vote no on this rebalance bill. Find some way to make 911 whole again and then rebalance the 2007-2009 budget. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Kenmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the conversation that we've been having about this, and I appreciate, too, the issue of discussing trust with the public and our responsibility with dedicated special funds and trust funds. And first of all, I would like to offer a word of appreciation. About 2 weeks ago in our Subcommittee on Human Resources, we were presented with the reality that the damage trust was going to be hit for about $6.5 million out of its $12.5 million total amount. And I think it would be fair to say to all of us who are very concerned about special needs housing and how difficult that is to provide, we're somewhere between horrified and mortified. And I appreciate, I think our committee came together, and I don't know all of the black box machinations of what happened, but I appreciate that $6 million was restored back to the damaged trust, $500,000 of interest was taken. However, I do think that that constitutes a concern. And for those of us in that labor I think it's a matter of trust and concern. Similarly, the cultural trust has been addressed. And, you know, many of us have participated and made contributions to that cultural trust. My wife and I are among them. Looks like a colleague here is among them. Hopefully many of you are among them. And indeed, I appreciate the representative from Milwaukee, Southeast Portland, talking about those license plates. In fact, enough people have subscribed that $1.3 million has been paid with the expectation that that goes to the arts. And that $1.3 million plus another $500,000 is destined to go elsewhere. I agree that maybe it's not the largest amount of money in the world, but it is a dedicated fund. And I'll get to that in just a moment in my final remarks. I think my third concern is with the 911. As many of you know, I spent the last 12 years as a county commissioner. And that 75 cents that we citizens and businesses pay each month on our bill for 911 service is a critical amount of money. In fact, statewide, it averages 30% of the costs of providing that critical, essential, necessary service. In my county, Clackamas County, it's 15%. But what a challenge that budget is, because you've been following what's been happening in telephone service, how the marketplace is changing. You have to upgrade these systems, and when you do, it's at an enormous cost that's spread over a very large group. I think that that's what it was dedicated for, and I would note that back in August of 2007, Governor Kulongoski used his line item veto on a measure, and his comment was, it is important that funds collected from telecommunications customers for enhancements to the 911 emergency system be used for the purposes established in the applicable statutes. I don't know what his intention is, but I hope perhaps he will consider a line item veto. I think the points made that this essentially is a mandate on local government ought to be taken for real. But probably more important is, I guess, my concern about, yes, we are in a crisis. I think, hopefully, I suspect all of us are aware of that and deeply troubled. But I think that in our haste, we need to safeguard trust. And when we have remaining monies in the Rainy Day Fund, PEB, Education Stabilization, I think before we get to trust funds, we ought to look to those first. And I don't know where we go in the upcoming $3 billion deficit. We may have to get to some of those places, but they ought to be the last places, not among the early ones. Thank you very much.
Further discussion, Representative Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, it will be no surprise to any of you that I'm rising here today to talk about schools. It was my life for 32 years, and it's something that is dear to me. And I had a number of town halls regarding the budget reductions the last few weeks to really address that issue with my constituents, and I keep in pretty close contact with a number of my school superintendents and others. And I was one of those people who, and I want to thank the Ways and Means people. Not being a Ways and Means person, it was easier for me to keep harassing them on a daily basis regarding no-cut days this year. It was something that was important, I think, to everybody in the House, that we had worked so hard last session to get to the point where schools didn't have to cut. And what would we think about what we did with this budget? It really has allowed us the opportunity for our local districts to make very difficult decisions to keep their schools open or to maybe only have to cut a few days. And having been in a school district that's had to, on multiple occasions, cut those days, those are not something that school districts take lightly. In talking to some of our school board members, with this rebalance, they can actually get to the point where they don't have to cut any days. Now, they may not have any carryover, and that's not a real good place to be, as we all know. And so they're looking hard at that and trying to decide how do we make this work. But I trust that we have given local school boards the opportunity to make those and to look at how they can balance their budgets and work with us to make this whole thing work. The school restoration fund will allow most of those districts to finish out the entire year. We've already heard from many districts that they had planned on cutting a number of days. When the first news came about $855 million, the call to me was, we may be closing in April if that comes about. And I need people to remember, if these rebalance bills don't pass, we go back to across-the-board cuts, and that's $344 million that goes away. That's when my district was talking about 30 and 40 days of cut school this year. They don't have to face that now. This rebalance allows them to keep the doors open, keep kids in school, and I am really pleased about that. I also want to remind you, in these negotiations and how things are going, we got information back that we're looking at another $100 million or so. We're going to have cuts of $167 million. That meant a lot of days continued, and we put a lot of pressure on those Ways and Means people to go back and negotiate one more time to find that place where we wouldn't have to do that. And they came up and were able to come up with another $51 million. That was the point at which I told my districts, you know, this is almost the point of the miracle happening. And they agreed because they knew how bad it looked. And I want to commend our colleague from the far eastern Oregon, because I truly do agree with him. We need to make sure that people understand that it's going to get worse, and we're going to set this glide path that allows people to make appropriate decisions. I believe that the match was made in this rebalance, such that people understand that it's difficult, they can finish this year, but more than that, they are ready to keep going down and understanding, as they get these new information about how much we're going to have to cut, they are prepared to make those and do the work that they have to do. Yes, we've all had to sacrifice, and yes, there will even be tougher choices down the road. But because we were able to work with the governor and the Senate, and because of the work our caucus members and co-chair Buckley did, we will pass a budget that gets us through today and truly does set us up for tomorrow. And I think we all have to keep having those conversations with people throughout the state about how different the landscape looks. And I guess I would just end by saying, listening to all your conversations today, you know, if having been in a family where, as a kid, my father would not necessarily have a job, something would happen in our lives, we may have had little funds that we set up for special opportunities, for Christmas or whatever. But we recognized as a family that we had to change what we were doing. We had to change what we were doing when the really tough times came. And we had to take a little bit from each of those funds to make it through. And I think as a state, we really need to see ourselves as a large family, as a body, as a family, making those very difficult decisions today. I encourage you to vote for Senate Bill 581A. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill?
To the bill. Colleagues, no one in this chamber has more respect for my colleague from Ashland and my friend and his work. I want everyone to know that. But unfortunately, in this arena, in this chamber, in this venue, we all realize we have to get across the street. But there are 60 different ways to get across the street. That's what this is boiling down to. We understand, and I understand, the word trust. We are now today embarking upon raiding trust funds. I'm not sure if that's quite the way to say that, but when you do have trust funds and you're taking the money away from that trust fund and diverting it into something else, that's raiding the trust fund. That's why I can't support this bill. The other thing, that if we all look at it, We talked about the state police. Let's talk about the state police. For 30 years now, we've been promising him this. We've been promising him that. Now we're going to take funds away from them again with the promise it'll be there. Well, I'm not sure we can write that check and cash it. That's where I'm coming from. The other disturbing thing that came out of this was we took $3.5 million from the Fish and Wildlife deferred maintenance account. Yet, colleagues, we bonded $1.2 million for their deferred maintenance. I think we need to really think about this organization, and I think we should do some accountability in the future. But we cannot continue on the pace of allowing our schools to be out for a certain number of days when we're setting on a school stability fund for tomorrow. When we say, well, it's a rainy day fund in a sort, but yet we do not understand that it's raining now. It would backfill with about $217 million, I believe, as of July 1st. I think we could have taken a couple hundred million out of there. If you take the $100 million out of PEB, we wouldn't have to lose any school days. It would give the schools a long-range plan in the future for the next biennium budget to work out the way they want to get there instead of the last minute starting to cut classes. Money taken from different accounts for specific purposes is the one that bothers me the most. When we dedicate funding or when we have a trust fund that people volunteer to put money in and we divert that, I think in the private sector, if you did that, you would have a whole heap of trouble. But yet that's what we're doing. With that, colleagues, and like I said, no one respects my colleague from Ashland more than I do. He is my friend, and I do respect him. I just disagree of how we're getting across the street. With that, colleagues, I urge your no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill. I truly understand many of the concerns that have been raised this morning and appreciate the willingness of people to raise them in this debate. I respect the motives of those who have risen in opposition to this bill. I just see it very differently. I too am deeply, deeply frustrated that Oregonians are ensnared in a mess not of our making. A mess that, from my point of view, has developed as a result of years of what I think we can clearly now see have been disastrous economic decisions made at the national level. Just a month ago, our budget chasm here in Oregon threatened to force the closure of prisons and the release of convicted criminals, to force closing our local schools weeks, perhaps months, ahead of schedule, putting at risk the ability of the seniors in our high school to earn their diploma this spring, and for our college and university students, putting at risk their ability to complete the coursework that would give them a degree in May or June. We risked allowing our neighbors and our constituents to fall through a shredded safety net. And we risked allowing patients who depend on our goodwill particularly mental health patients, to die for lack of medicine or care. But with this bill, we are no longer facing those outcomes. Is it perfect? Is it everything I would like? No. But I am voting in favor of this bill today because I value and am committed to the services this bill protects. In challenging times, colleagues, silence is not an option. We could defeat this bill today, and what would happen then? From my vantage point, that litany of horrors is what would happen. You may see it differently, and I respect your analysis if you do. But I believe, given what we know from the rest of this building, that that would be the outcome. And for me, there is no way I could support that. Defeating this bill, I think we can probably agree, would not change Oregon's economic fate today. It would not fill the hole in the budget for the services people care about. And it would not create or preserve a single job for an Oregonian. The strong leadership of members in my caucus and members in the Republican caucus who labor on ways and means has brought us a much better outcome than silence, and I am glad to support it.
Further discussion, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, Senate Bill 581 is yet another example of why Oregonians have little or are losing confidence in the legislature. Oregonians literally pay and contribute billions of dollars in taxes and fees, and many of these taxes and fees are intended for very specific purposes. By passing Senate Bill 581, the legislature is pulling a classic bait and switch on Oregonians. By passing this bill today, make no mistake, we'll make our budget process less transparent, less accountable, and the faltering confidence we do have continues to go down. By passing Senate Bill 581, the legislature sends the message to Oregonians that it's okay to bait and switch our citizens, that in fact it's okay to fool taxpayers into believing they are supporting specific services with their contributions and fees, when in fact the money is actually going to pay for something entirely different. In private industry, when you do this, it's wrong. But somehow, when the state does it, we are finding it acceptable. Colleagues, I don't find it acceptable at all, and I would ask you to join me in voting no on Senate Bill 581.
Representative Buckley, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, thank you very much for your discussion on this bill. Obviously, not an easy challenge for us to meet. Obviously, I do appreciate my colleague from Medford with making a comparison about all 60 of us having different ideas of how to cross the street. Usually with my colleague from Medford, we end up arguing which street we're on. But I appreciate his comments very much. I would like to respond to a few comments that have been made. I'll try to kind of take them in order. My colleague from West Lynn, I love it when he quotes FDR, I got to say. It pleases me. It is the comment about FDR and the Work Projects Administration and in playing artists, I look back at very fondly, you know, in terms of my background. That was a great, great thing. And the fact that the FDR actually said that artists are people, too, it brings to mind the line from Mel Brooks' movie, The Producer, when Zero Mostel has this plot in mind that is actually going to be very, of course, disastrous for the actors. I'm losing the name. Curly-haired actor, great actor, turns to Mel Brooks. Who was it? Gene Wilder turns to Mel Brooks and says, you can't do that. Actors are humans. And Zero Mostel's response is, oh, yeah? Have you ever eaten dinner with one? You know, it's a great line. I'm going to talk a little bit seriously about the cultural trust. And to all the actors I've offended, where is my colleague, the other actor who's in the house here? My apologies to the actor I offended there. And to everyone back home in Ashland, my apologies for that remark. I would like to talk a little bit about the 9/11 issue that was brought up. Just to be extremely clear about the funds that are involved with 9/11, they are the enhancement funds for 9/11. And yes, it's serious. It's very serious. These are funds used by 9/11 operations throughout the state to enhance their capabilities. But colleagues, not a single operation in the state will be damaged to the point where they're not responding to services in the next 4 months. They will be responding to every call, just as they have been now. What we are taking away, bottom line, is their ability to enhance that service for the next 4 months. It's not something done lightly, not done something with any sense of joy or pride on my part, but that is the cut that has been made and agreed upon. If there is any possibility of coming up against federal law, obviously, we cannot trump federal law, and given some of the statements I've made about judicial, I certainly do not want to find myself in a courtroom anytime soon. So I think that I just want to reassure you that we are staying to that side of the use of those funds. Talk a little bit about some of the issues that were brought up. Economic development, for instance, was brought up, and natural resources, too, in the comments were very well taken. The only response I can give on that is that we're talking about situations where these are small departments whose general funds are fairly large in comparison to the size of other budgets, so it does show up as disproportionate. We try to be as surgical as possible in terms of addressing these departments. And with economic development, for instance, you'll note that staff positions in our economic development programs are held intact. We have taken away some of their resources, but the staff, the main driving force behind the work in economic development, is still in place. We try to do this surgically, but I want to acknowledge the validity of those comments. There have been comments about whether we should have taken more from balances or from this fund, from that fund. The way I came to eventually look at the reality that we're facing is we have one-time money. And again, we've talked about the federal stimulus, how grateful it is to have this federal stimulus. It's one-time money. The Education Stability Fund, even though it does get refilled, is one-time money, and we will have more in the Education Stability Fund after July 1st, and we will use it in 09/11. The Rainy Day Fund is one-time money that we can take a portion of, but we have to find the way to refill it. So I look at it, we have all these pots that will have one-time money. So the question then comes down to, what's the best use of that one-time money? How much do you use now? How much do you use towards that situation that we're facing in 09/11 with $3.1, $3.3 billion in growing hole to fill? So that reasonable people can come up with different paths to go through it. You can cross the street a different way with the use of that money. We negotiated, we argued, we fought, we came up with a package that uses that one-time money. It uses about 20% of that one-time money this biennium, leaving about 80% of that one-time money for the next 2 years. In my view, that was a responsible choice. Your results may differ, but that's how we went about it. Finally, I would like to talk, colleagues, about an issue that's close to me, very close to me, the cultural trust. And in the negotiations, this was not easy. That's not easy at all. But I felt, what finally came down for me was I was asking agencies across the board, Oregonians from all over the state, to make a sacrifice to deal with this crisis that we're facing. I have 25 years in the arts. I'm married to a woman who works for the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. Her boss called. I can't even tell you the attention that this has gotten. And the response that I have to is, if I am asking people in the agricultural community to give up fees that they have paid for a certain purpose to address this overall crisis. If I'm asking people in Fish and Wildlife who have paid a fee for a certain service, then we're saying we're not going to be able to provide that service and we need that money to address an overall crisis in education, in health care, or in public safety. If I'm asking Oregonians across the board to do that, who am I to say that my industry, my family, my district should be held harmless? And I could not make that argument. I cannot make that today. So I agree. I agree to that cut. The word trust, it's an important word. And there's no good feeling I have at all about taking money from a trust fund. But the word trust I'm going to use is that we're trusted. We are trusted to guide our state through extremely difficult time. That is the trust I think that we're addressing with the work that we have done. There are comments made, Mr. Speaker, and I don't dwell on them. There are comments about things like bait and switch or fooling Oregonians. Mr. Speaker, I can only respond to those with great sadness. We all love the people of our state of Oregon. We love our communities. We love our businesses. We love our schools. People I meet in the grocery store, people that you meet at PTA meetings or at sporting events, there's no desire to bait and switch. There's no desire to fool a single Oregonian. There's a desire to serve, Mr. Speaker. And that's what we're called to do. And we're here to serve. You can disagree about how we're fulfilling that service. But to say that there's an attempt to fool, there's an attempt to cheat, there's an attempt to do anything but serve, I find to be extremely discouraging, Mr. Speaker. Extremely discouraging. But I'm not going to end on that note, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to end on the note of a sense of gratitude. This has been a tremendously difficult process. This conversation on the floor has been, I think, very good, and I appreciate the comments, and I appreciate the points of view for all concerned. I have great gratitude for the members of the Ways and Means Committee who have buckled down and got to work and tried to find solutions. I mentioned Representative Edwards, Representative Nathan, Representative Coder, everybody who's on Ways and Means, Representative Galizia, Representative Shields, everybody who's on Ways and Means fought tremendously hard to find what's the creative solution, what's the better way, is there a different way we can go about this, how do we protect people, what else can we do? Representative Richardson, I should apologize for that. The representative from Central Point contributed with a suggestion to go after funds, and we were able to go after a fund that we found $20 million in to help towards this goal. The members of the Ways and Means process have contributed greatly to this. I'm so grateful the way that they've gone after this work, and even members of the Ways and Means who are going to vote against this bill today, I respect your work, I respect your contribution, I'm tremendously grateful to it. I'm grateful to Senator Carter, my partner in this work, who has a very entertaining vocabulary. And she's not afraid to use it in any of the discussions that we've had over any of these issues, but the bottom line was relentless in trying to find solutions. Solutions. How do we serve? How do we best take care of our state of Oregon? And I have great gratitude to the staff of Legislative Fiscal, tremendously hardworking staff. When people say night and day, it's kind of overused, but there was never a point when I walked in there that was the office was not open, people were not working, they were not trying to do the same thing. What's the best solution? What can we do? How can we help our state through the crisis that we face right now? So, colleagues, I'm going to end on a note of gratitude. I'm going to end with a thanks to all of you and for your time and consideration today, and to urge an aye vote on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Senate Bill 581A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nolan.
With the speaker's leave, I will extend a courtesy during announcements, or should I request unanimous consent?
Representative Nolan requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? So ordered. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think they may have left already because our debate extended a while, but I would like to ask you to join me in welcoming to the Capitol today and to the House members of the American Civil Liberties Union from all corners of the state. I hope you will find a little bit of time to visit with them when they come by your offices and ask for just a few moments of your time. They are here in the Capitol today because freedom can't defend itself. It relies on us to defend it.
Are there any further courtesies? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would draw your attention to the side aisle here. This is Carol Dinges. She is the librarian at Lebanon High School, and please welcome her to the Capitol.
Welcome. Further courtesies, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the opportunity. Colleagues, I have the distinct pleasure of introducing students from Al Kennedy High School in Cottage Grove, along with their teachers, Chris Olson and Brandy Rudisell-Baker. This school was founded by Al Kennedy, a forestry teacher, in 1998. The students and teachers alike are dedicated to achieving rigorous academic standards in a sustainable environment. Kennedy truly is a 21st century school. Colleagues, please welcome the students from Kennedy High School in Cottage Grove. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Welcome to the House. Enjoy your day in the Capitol. Any further courtesies? Back to announcements. Colleagues, I would remind you one of the great rivalries in our state is the rivalry between the Oregon House of Representatives and the Oregon Senate. We have been called out by them because the governor's food drive challenge right now, listen to these numbers, stands Oregon Senate, 4,604, Oregon House, $1,742. We have an opportunity, colleagues. The deadline for the food drive challenge is the 9th, which I think is next Monday. So let's step it up. The Senate is calling us out. And there is a silent auction going on today in the Galleria, so that all the proceeds will go toward the House's total of that challenge. Further announcements, Representative Barker.
Mr. Speaker, I have a personal check for $200 for the governor's food drive. I will hand to you in mere seconds. Thank you.
Thank you. Further announcements.
My colleagues join.
Remonstrances. Representative Thatcher.
Kind of an announcement. I just want to brag about the McNary girls basketball team. They're in the 6A quarterfinals, and they beat Clackamas last night, 64-54.
Further remonstrances, Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. More basketball news. I was remiss yesterday in not filling you in to the point that I should have after telling you about the game that was happening the preceding night. And as in most sporting matches, the better team won, and the team from gentlemen from West Lynn's district beat our team, Sunset High School, by 1 point. But it was a heck of a game, a fantastic game all around. High school basketball is always great, and that was a really good one. And my son did rather well, so I feel good. Thank you.
Any further remonstrances? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hate to have to do this, but I am going to demand that the representative from Beaverton, Aloha, return my checkbook. Thank you.
Further remonstrances. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Since we were kind of going around about the sports thing, I'm derelict in having not commented and given due credit to the Hermiston Class 5 school wrestling accomplishment this year in winning the state championship for, I believe now, three consecutive years in a row. And, by the way, in winning that championship by more points than any other wrestling team has ever accumulated in the state of Oregon.
Very good. Seeing no further remonstrances. Adjournment. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House stand adjourned until Monday, 10:15 a.m., March 9th, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Monday, March 9th, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourned.